The crazed and vicious lord they called Dervish. He stared at X, eyes alight with anger. You will beg for many things before the horizon swallows the sun, he said. Dervish resumed the destruction of the trees, stripping branches and snapping trunks so that their interiors lay exposed. X stepped forward, hesitantly. Yes, yes, draw near, Dervish screamed. Mark well what I do to these trees, for it pales next to the violence I shall visit upon you, and those creatures who have sheltered you. The lord had pointy, rat-like features. His face was as gray and papery as a wasp's nest. You were hoping the one you call regent would come for you, no doubt, said the lord. But he is too soft a kitten, you see. He coddled you. And in return, you shamed him by letting your prey escape and by mingling with mortals. When you return to the lowlands, do not be surprised if you see Regent's bones floating in your soup. He paused, then added with relish, I am your master now.
I shall do whatever you ask, said X. But I beg you to spare the family that took me in. They know nothing of who I am.
At this, the lord squawked with laughter. And now you would lie to me, he said. I have borne witness to your every moment in that house. I have heard your pathetic mewling. You are like a love-struck schoolboy plucking petals from a flower. X repeated his plea, even more softly.
Spare the family, I beg you. I will do whatever you require.
Indeed you shall, said the lord. And I shall require things that will reduce your heart to ash. He stomped toward X. On your knees, bounty hunter, he demanded. It is time you took Stan's sins into your blood once more.
Dervish grasped X's face with both hands and began reciting the familiar speech.
The lowlands require another soul for its collection. He is an evil man, unrepentant and unpunished.
As he continued, the lord's fingernails, long, curling and yellowed, punctured X's skin and sent blood down his cheeks. X felt the lord's power flow through his body. Once again, Stan's story entered him. It was even more hateful this time because new sins had been added to the old. When Dervish had finished, he shoved X to the ground, where he stood as if in a seizure. The lord left him writhing and stalked toward the Bissell's house, leaving a wake of splintered trees. X was terrified for Zoe and her family. He found the strength to stand. He stumbled through the darkening woods, crashing against the very branches he had labored to preserve. He imagined the lord's sickening hand closing around Zoe's pale throat. The thought of it nearly caused him to empty his stomach into the snow. X found Dervish at the edge of the forest. The lord was lurking behind the last row of trees, making certain he could not be seen from the house. He wheeled around toward X. He smiled so widely that his crooked teeth glinted in the dusk.
So this is where you have played house with your pretty little mortals, Dervish purred horribly. Do you know how easy it would be for me to murder them all? How easy, and how pleasing.
I do, said X, fearing that if he added even one more syllable it would enrage the lord.
Bring me the soul whose name swims in your blood, Dervish said coldly, then pointed toward Zoe's house. Do not fail a second time, else I shall return here tomorrow night, and I shall swim in theirs.
9. X dove into the ground as if it were water.
He blazed through snow, dirt, rock. The earth itself parted before him and closed again once he had passed. Stan Mangold's sins were flowing through him in a rush once more, this time coupled with X's own fury. He had released the man. He had shown him mercy, only so Stan could murder again. Now X had been torn from Zoe. Now his heart was in ruins, all the worse because he'd only just discovered what his heart was actually for. X burst out of the earth in a hot, sludgy marsh. He was in a part of the country he had never seen. He tried to orient himself, but there was no time. Noises were already assaulting his ears. 100 yards off, a pack of hunting dogs barked riotously. A squadron of geese swarmed the sky, and a half-dozen shotguns crackled, decorating the air with smoke. For all the villainous men and women he had encountered, X had never heard gunfire. The noise jolted him. He felt it under his skin. 3 birds plummeted from the sky. The hunters lowered their guns and broke into chatter about the wind and the light. They drank from silver flasks that winked in the day's last light. Some of them already had dead geese strung around their necks on giant necklaces. They reminded X of stories Ripper had told him about cannibals who wore skulls across their chests. He was no better than the hunters, or even the cannibals. He might as well have worn 14 skulls on a necklace of his own for all the souls he'd taken. Stan's skull would be next. The hunters collected their trophies and pressed on. As he waited for them to disappear, X's mind crept back to Zoe. He pictured her wearing his coat in the rain. He was glad he'd left something of himself behind. She would wear it, even if it was too long for her, even if it hung down around her ankles. He knew she would. And someday soon he would knock on her front door and say... What would he say? He would say, "I forgot my coat." She would like that. She would smile. And then he would kiss her for the second time. She'd expect him to be shy, but he was finished with shyness forever. There was no time for it. When he could no longer hear the dogs, X climbed out of the marsh and wrung the water from his pants. The ground was flat for miles. It looked nothing like Montana. There were clumps of trees here and there, but mostly it was just wetlands, marked by wide rivers and tiny, tufted green islands. It looked as if the world had been flooded, and the water had only just begun to recede. There was no road in sight, but X didn't need one. He moved at a superhuman pace. The anger in him fed the longing, and the longing fed the anger. The marshy ground exploded with water as he passed. Had anyone been watching, they would have seen what looked like a comet cutting through the landscape. After a mile, X felt the pain coursing through him deepen. The trembling was guiding him. He was on Stan's trail. He found him just a few minutes later. Stan was walking the main street of a dusty town, eating an ice cream cone and peering into a shop window, looking as innocent as a child. X was repulsed by the sight of him. But there were too many people dotting the street for him to charge at Stan and snap his neck. He stepped out of sight and waited for his prey to turn down some quiet passageway. X didn't know the name of the town. 1/2 mile back, atop a pole wrapped in vines, there had been a sign, shaped like a coat of arms. He had stared at it, sensing that it welcomed him to the town of somewhere in the state of something. The name of the state had an X in it. He recognized it from what Zoe had written on the back of his hand. He looked down at his hand, wishing she'd told him what the other letters meant. The message was already beginning to fade. My ex. He shook off the thought of her. He had to deliver Stan to the lowlands. If he did, there was a chance he could see Zoe again one day. If he failed, she and her family might not even survive until morning.
when he looked up. Stan had disappeared. X headed down the sidewalk, catching his reflection in a store window. He looked like a wild creature. His pants were filthy, his shirt was torn, and his hair. His hair looked as if it had been in an ice storm and a marsh. Every strand was straining in a different direction. He'd draw too much attention like this. He found a shop with a horse etched into the door and a rack of colorful shirts on the sidewalk. X peeked inside. No one was watching. He slipped one of the shirts off its hanger. It was purple with decorative white stitching that looped across the chest. X put it on over his own shirt. It was too small for him, and he could not even begin to manage the pearl buttons, so he left it hanging open. He stared at himself again in the window. Now he looked like a wild creature wearing a purple shirt. He shook his head and went after Stan. The pain told him which way to go as surely as a compass. When he found Stan, he saw that he'd bitten the bottom off his ice cream cone and was sucking out the last dregs. Ice cream dripped off his chin and onto his stomach. Stan finished the cone and strolled to the edge of the street, which was lined with trucks and SUVs. He examined a dark green pickup to see if it was worth stealing. He made up his mind against it, rubbed his nose, and kept walking. Halfway down the block, Stan swung open the door of a store and stepped out of sight. X followed. He couldn't read the name on the store window, but, on the door, there was a pair of scissors and a woman caressing her silky hair. X peeked over the lacy curtains that lined the window. In the front of the store, behind a glossy desk, there was a bored young woman taking a photograph of her toenails. In back, there were half a dozen women in smocks milling about. Stan was already behaving ridiculously, dancing around a handsome, brown-skinned woman in a way that seemed vile. The woman kept gesturing nervously to the chair. X was so close to Stan now that his body began to shiver. But revealing who he was, what he was, to another half-dozen people seemed like madness. He leaned his head against the window, hoping the pain would pass. It did not. It grew and grew, until X felt as if he were a puppet whose master was violently shaking his strings. He had broken so many laws of the lowlands. What was one more indiscretion? He swung the door open. He was in such discomfort now that the woman behind the desk was just a floral, lipsticked blur.
"Welcome to the House of Uncommon Beauty," she said in a drawl.
Before X could respond, the woman had taken in his preposterous hair.
"Oh, sugar," she said. "I don't think we can help you with that."
X tried to center himself, to clear his mind. He could hear Stan in the back, yammering. He was telling the woman cutting his hair to call him Stan the Man, or,
"depending on how cozy we get,
Stanley the Manly." The woman behind the desk rolled her eyes.
"That one's trouble," she said. "Minute he walked in, I said, 'Mister, you been drinking?' And he hoots and says, 'Since I was 14. "I'll tell you what, I'm calling the sheriff if he gives Mariana any trouble,"
X growled, half in anger, half in agony, and stumbled toward the back. He ignored the woman when she called after him. Mariana had laid a hot towel over Stan's face. Steam rose off it now, as he reclined in his chair, moaning with pleasure.
"You ain't beautiful, but you sure as shit ain't ugly," he told Mariana. "Why don't you come sit on Santa's lap?"
He reached out blindly to grope her, but she sidestepped him like a bullfighter. X gestured for Mariana to stay silent. He drew close to Stan, disgusted and furious, and raked with pain. He grasped Stan's throat,
Mariana gasped. The other women fled, half of them in smocks, their wet hair flying. But Mariana seemed too shocked to move. Stan tore the towel from his face. He saw X in the mirror. He began kicking and punching wildly at the air. X laughed darkly.
"It was my dearest wish that you would fight," he said.
"Yeah, well, I sure as hell will, super freak," said Stan. "And, by the way, nice shirt, cowboy. Tight enough?"
Stan cast his eyes around as X closed his grip around his throat. There was a pair of scissors glinting on the counter. He jabbed them into X's thigh and twisted them viciously. X cried out, more in annoyance than pain. He pulled the scissors from his leg and sent them clattering across the floor. He did not let go of Stan's skinny neck, even when blood began to soak through his pants. He turned to Mariana.
"You would be safer elsewhere," he said, as gently as he could.
He gazed around the salon and saw his reflection multiplied endlessly in the mirrors, like he was the front line of an army.
"What are you gonna do to him?" said Mariana.
"I'm going to propel him through the wall," said X. Mariana rushed out of the salon now, too. Stan continued to struggle. He didn't seem to realize that the more he lashed out, the harder X squeezed his windpipe.
"You ain't taking me with you, super freak," he rasped. "You'll have to kill me first."
"Yes," said X.
"I will."
Stan grabbed things from the counter and hurled them at X. Spray cans, bottles, a brush, a hairdryer. X pushed him hard against the chair. He regarded Stan pityingly, as one would look at a child having a tantrum. When Stan had run out of projectiles, X pulled him out of the chair and dashed him to the floor. Stan tried to scramble to his feet, but X raised his boot and brought it crashing down on his back. They remained motionless for a time. Then, breaking the silence, came a terrible new sound. Stan was crying. X had no pity.
"Has your courage fled so soon?" he said.
He took a step backward. Stan rolled onto his back and cradled his enormous head in his hands, sobbing dismally. X loathed the man so much that the noise had no effect on him. It might have been the screeching of a scavenger bird. Soon, Stan was listing the many reasons he did not deserve to die. X had heard such speeches from many men. Banger was the only exception. He'd simply asked X if he'd be able to get cell service where they were going. Stan moaned, lied, and made excuses for himself so vehemently that spittle flew from his lips. X only half listened. Finally, Stan quieted. X stood and removed both the purple shirt and the threadbare one beneath it.
"Oh, come on," said Stan. "Again? With the damn strip show?"
X stretched out his arms and felt Stan's sins gathering force within him. Images began to bloom on his back. A car was stalled by the side of an unlit highway. An old man with a friendly, open face had pulled over to help and was shuffling toward the car. He was wearing flip-flops, a pink Izod shirt, and khaki shorts. His legs were knobby and white as an uncooked chicken. He rapped his knuckles on the driver's window. The driver was Stan. He'd been lying in wait for a Good Samaritan. He thrust open his door, knocking the old man onto the road. The man looked up in confusion. He reached up a hand for help. Stan kicked him in the ribs. The old man crawled into the highway to get away. Stan followed, laughing and kicking, until the man lay in the middle of the road, the double yellow lines under his back cowering in the salon. Stan turned away from the images. He could not bear to watch. X extended a palm toward a mirror, and the mirror jumped to life. The movie now played there, too. In an instant, it jumped to the next mirror, and then the next, and so on around the room, as if the mirrors were catching fire one by one. X pulled Stan's head up high and forced him to watch. "I gave you your freedom on the lake," he shouted. "I gave you your life, and this is what you squandered it on." In the movie, Stan was hooting with happiness as he slid into the old man's car and peeled away. His victim lay stranded in the middle of the highway. He tried crawling and rolling. He tried pulling himself across the blacktop with his fingernails. His flip-flops had fallen off and lay behind him in the road. Now a truck could be heard coming around the curve. Its headlights were high. Its brakes were screaming. Not even X could watch the rest. He clenched his fist, and the movie vanished. Outside the salon, he heard police sirens, howling like cats. They were half a mile away and growing louder. X looked at Stan with a glimmer of compassion. It was then that Stan knew he was truly about to die. He was so scared, he could barely bleed out a word.
"Now?"
he said.
"Now," said X. "Don't you gotta take me back to that lake?"
said Stan.
"No," said X. "We can reach our destination from anywhere. We can reach it from here."
X dressed slowly. When he had finished, he closed his eyes for a moment, and the room instantly went dark.
"Why'd you turn out the lights?"
said Stan. He was stalling. "Respect for the dead," said X. When Stan gave him a puzzled look, he added simply,
"You."
He picked up Stan. He threw him over his shoulder. He turned to the great round mirror at Mariana's station.
Will it hurt?"
said Stan.
"Only forever," said X.
He leaped at the mirror. The glass exploded as he and Stan passed through it. The shards, rather than raining onto the floor, were pulled in after them. X left the shell of Stan's body behind, a worn and ugly casing for the police to find, as he pulled his soul down into the dark. 10. They fell into a half-lit void. The air rushed past them so fiercely that it obliterated all sound. X was accustomed to it, but he knew Stan would feel a crushing pressure on his eyeballs, a hammering in his ears. He saw Stan panic and resist the fall. He watched as Stan clawed at the air with his hands, as if he could climb back to the surface, as if there was a surface. The wind thrashed them in every direction. X fell faster than Stan. He had tucked himself into a ball, like a diver. When he saw Stan struggling, he unfurled his body, reached up, and grabbed a hold of Stan's ankle to steady him. Stan kicked ferociously, but gave up after one last pathetic spasm. X suspected his senses were so overwhelmed that they had stopped functioning. Stan let his arms drift over his head. He let X drag him down. After they had fallen for a time, Stan recovered some of his equilibrium. X knew what would happen next. He could predict it almost to the second. Stan would be hit with a sadness so severe it was nearly blinding. Regret, remorse, and rage would overtake him, as they overtook all new souls. It was always at this moment that they realized they were not traveling down a holy tunnel toward a shimmering light, but rather falling down a shaft to oblivion. Stan began crying again, right on schedule. X was grateful that he couldn't hear it this time. Just the distorted, wailing look on Stan's face was enough to turn his stomach. All freshly plucked souls wept. Never for their victims, only for themselves. And X found the self-pity galling. They all believed they were innocent, no matter what they had done. As the wind howled around them, Stan cried voluminously. His tears flew upward, like bubbles. The air grew cold. It was the breath of the river rising up to greet them. The journey, X knew, was nearly over. He looked down and saw the river that cut through his hive in the lowlands. It was just a pale thread at first, but it came at them fast. There were only 1,000 feet left to fall. Then 500. Stan must have seen the roiling current, too. He shut his eyes, filled his cheeks with air, and clutched his nose like a child jumping into a pool. X closed his own eyes and pictured Zoe's face, soft and welcoming. He promised himself again that he would return to her, that he would take that face carefully in his hands, that he would say, "I forgot my coat." The water hit them like a wall. The river in the lowlands raged as always, but X reached the banks with ease, even without the powers he enjoyed in the overworld. He had delivered Stan, so the trembling had vanished. Along with his powers went his pain. For a brief time, his body would feel relieved and renewed. Behind him, Stan screamed at the arctic cold of the current. He scrambled for the banks, but the river kept sucking him under. A handful of guards crowded the water's edge, laughing at him. When Stan finally made it to the riverside, his lungs were heaving. He bent over and vomited water and ice cream into the dirt. A guard approached him with a kindly expression, picked him up, and threw him back in. The others roared with delight. Stan began to make for the other side of the river, but there were guards waiting there, too. X sat in the dirt and waited for someone to bring him a blanket and a wedge of bread, as they always did when he returned with a soul. He noticed, with a shiver of dread, that Dervish stood preening nearby. X wished again that it was Regent instead. He drew in a deep breath and steeled himself for a confrontation. He would be humble, hang his head, beg forgiveness 100 times. He would endure whatever humiliation Dervish could devise. Sooner or later, his crime would be forgotten, carried away as if by the river. He would be sent back to the overworld to collect the next soul, and he would steal away to see Zoe. An hour with her would sustain him for a year. But Dervish did not so much as glance in X's direction. He clapped when Stan stumbled. He whistled and hooted when the current dragged his big fuzzy head under the water. Dervish was draped in gaudy necklaces and bracelets, all of them stolen from the souls of the lowlands. The jewelry shimmered and clattered as he hopped around.
"Well done, guardsman," he shouted. "Well done."
X stared openly at Dervish now, anxious for his punishment to begin. He knew the Lord would still be boiling with rage, yet the creature continued to ignore him. X had not expected this reception, and it worried him. The light had left his body now. The reality of the lowlands, the way it sucked all the hope and happiness out of you, the way it stank like the mouth of some enormous beast, flooded into him instead. His anxiety deepened. Still no blanket. Still no bread. X stood and waded into the river. Stan continued to battle the current. He was red-faced and panting, wailing about the cramps in his legs. X grabbed him around the waist and hoisted him over his shoulder yet again. Even without supernatural powers, he had no trouble lifting a knot of wire like Stan. He carried him to the side of the river.
Thank you, Super Freak,
said Stan, shouting to be heard over the rushing water.
I don't like anyone here so far.
The guards jeered when they saw that there was no more fun to be had. But even this was a comfort to X because it meant that life, such as it was in the lowlands, would lurch back into motion. He laid Stan on the ground and waited for the guards to descend on the terrified new prisoner. At last, Dervish sliced the air with his long, taloned forefinger and screamed,
"Seize him!"
But something was different. Something was wrong. The Lord was pointing at him. The guards raced at X from all sides, like lions on a fallen deer. The merriment at the river had been a ruse. They had been waiting for the Lord's signal all along. They stripped X of his purple shirt. He saw it pass through many hands. He saw it fought over, bartered for, and, finally, carried off triumphantly, like a newly captured flag. Dervish instructed the guards to carry X to the tree on the plain. There was some grumbling at this. The men were as small and round as hobbits and unaccustomed to true labor. But they did as they were told. X did not resist. At least now his punishment had begun, which meant that someday it would end. It was a long march through foul, humid air. The guards groaned angrily under their burden. Why had this traitor's punishment become their own? While Dervish strutted in front of them, the guards pinched and poked X as they bore him along. When they saw that the Lord not only did not object to X's mistreatment, but rather whooped with pleasure at it, they accidentally dropped him to the ground and dragged him a dozen feet at a time. The souls in the lowest ring of cells sensed something was afoot. They could see from the tattoos decorating X's arms and from the bruises on his face that he was a bounty hunter. It was unusual to see one punished, and thrilling. Word was passed up to the top ring of cells and out to the farthest edges. Soon, the great black wall seemed to shake as prisoners hollered in the tongues of 100 countries and thousands of years. All X heard as he passed was a storm of hate and anger. Occasionally, one voice could be heard above the others.
"What the hell have you done, boy?"
Ripper and Banger recognized X as he was carried across the plain. Ripper was so upset she twirled manically in her cell. She wept and spat, and cursed her fingernails for not yet being long enough to tear out. Banger suggested that she take a chill pill, which only confused her, and tried to shout down the souls who surrounded them, calling them haters and tools. The procession finally reached the tree. It was 30 feet tall, ugly and bare and elephant gray. Its trunk consisted of a dozen tortured, intertwining strands. Its mottled branches bent and swerved in every direction, as if in search of something they would never find. Its roots sank into the dirt like veins. The guards thrust X against the tree and bound him to it, which brought a wave of applause from the cells. The rope sawed at X's skin, but he knew better than to complain. When the guards had finished, they stepped away, and Dervish approached.
"Lovely to have you back among us, X," he said brightly. "I may call you X, I hope, as all your pretty new friends do."
The Lord circled the tree, testing his men's work.
"I fear this rope may not serve," he said. "Be a dear, X, and ask the gods if they might be so kind as to tighten it. I do very much want you to feel its embrace."
There were 4 guards, but they looked like a single, multi-headed beast. They were foul and pocked. Their clothes were a bizarre patchwork for, like the Lord's, they dressed in whatever they could steal from the prisoners. They wore frayed vests, ruffled shirts blackened with dirt, pinstriped pants and jeans, as well as a scarf or two, despite the heat.
one of the guards. He was the shortest and stoutest of them, and his nose had been broken so many times it was nearly flat against his face. Appeared to be the chief. He wore a white turtleneck and a red tie.
"Guards," said X. "Might you be so kind as to tighten my rope?"
The men laughed, as if he had told a bawdy joke.
"Of course, love," the stout one said. "'Twill be an honor."
The guard fussed with the rope, which, in truth, could hardly be made any tighter. Dervish tested it once more. X's blood was beginning to leak out from under it, and nodded his approval. The Lord faced the vast wall of souls, who were still shouting oaths at X. He motioned for silence.
"Behold a man who thinks himself better than you," he bellowed. "Behold the bounty hunter who calls himself X."
The cells began to rumble once more.
"Perhaps he is the very one who ripped you out of your life and ferried you here,"
the Lord went on, animated by the screams.
"Even if he is not, I dare say he would have done it gladly. Now, it seems, our noble bounty hunter has grown bored of our company. He has attempted to flee, for he has fallen in love. What say you, souls of the lowlands? Shall I let him go?"
Not even Dervish could have predicted the violent gust of profanity that emanated from the cells now. He turned to X, his eyes wild with delight.
"My heavens," he said. "It's as if they don't like you."
The Lord looked back to the wall.
"I believe I shall let you punish this man yourselves," he shouted. "Would you enjoy that?"
The cells erupted yet again. Fear slipped its cold hands around X's heart. Dervish called to the guards patrolling the wall. He ordered them to release some prisoners from their cells.
"A 100 or so, shall we say?" he said. "Let them come down here and mete out whatever justice they see fit."
X could not just hear the prisoners' bloodlust now. He could smell its sour odor drifting down from the cells. Out of nowhere, he remembered Zoe telling Jonah that pungent meant someone who likes puns. He was warmed by the memory. Dervish noticed.
"Look how he smiles," he shouted. "The bounty hunter does not fear you."
Cell doors clanged open. Prisoners thundered toward the steps. The wall was in a frenzy, chanting for X's blood.
"I must take my leave," the Lord told him. "I do so abhor violence."
The first wave of souls pounded toward him across the plain. The whole hive seemed to shudder under their feet. The guards hastily fled.
"I don't get paid enough for this shite, do I?"
said the stout one with the red tie, as he ran.
"You get paid?" said another. "It's a figure of speech, isn't it?"
The first souls to reach X merely spit at him or dealt him a single blow. He looked each of them in the eyes. He refused to so much as bow his head. The beatings soon grew fiercer. X forced his mind to drift. He remembered building the lowlands out of snow and toys. He pictured Zoe, Jonah, and their mother crowded around him in a yard fringed by waving pines. He was jolted out of his reverie by a voice he recognized.
"Dude, wake up! This shit is nuts!"
It was Banger, peering worriedly into his face. Ripper stood next to him. She was swaying in her filthy golden dress as if she were at a high society ball in London.
"Why should I wake?" said X. "I wake only to a nightmare. Nothing can stop these men from doing what they will."
"Shut up!"
said Banger.
That's just negative thinking.
Shut up, indeed, said Ripper.
She stopped mid-twirl and fixed X with her eyes.
You are dousing what promises to be a quite thrilling rescue.
X had always suspected that Ripper's mania was largely a pretense. It was as if she still expected to be put on trial for murdering her servant with that boiling tea kettle, and planned to use madness as a defense. Despite the flights of lunacy, X could see in Ripper the steely woman who had trained him. A dozen bounty hunters stood close by her now, their faces all wounded like X's from the Lord's fingers. Ripper had mentored them all, and they had come when she called.
I am grateful for your friendship, said X. But if you free me, you merely postpone my punishment till another day, and endanger yourselves. I will endure this now, and be done with it.
Don't be so bloody noble, Ripper said. You'll bore the arse off me.
She paused, her brain spinning in search of a plan.
If you won't let us free you, she said at length, then we can at least place our bodies between you and the threat. You are one of us, and we will not stand by while they make pulp of you.
Ripper called to the bounty hunters.
Form a ring, my daisies, she shouted, and do try to look at least a little fierce.
The hunters made a human chain around the tree. Banger and Ripper paced in front of them, the first line of defense. X was surprised and moved that so many of his fellow bounty hunters had come to his aid. Prisoners spilled forward in greater numbers. The chance to scrap with a bounty hunter or two was too tempting to pass up, and they all wanted to try their luck at getting through to X. The human chain may have been intended as a protective measure, but it took on the air of a challenge. Banger alone trounced half a dozen men, but soon the prisoners attacked him two at a time. Ripper came to his aid repeatedly, jumping on their backs, gouging at their eyes and trying to tear their fingers off with her teeth. She actually succeeded once, tossing the finger at her dazed victim's chest and exclaiming,
"Oh, don't weep, you infant! Your nanny can sew it back on."
Soon, the prisoners grew bored of losing. They attacked the tree in one vicious mass, surging past Banger and Ripper and assaulting the chain of bounty hunters with rocks and branches. X strained at the rope, but it only cut deeper into his skin. A handful of men were raining down blows on him now. A bearded giant crashed a rock against the side of his skull. A tiny, pink worm of a man jabbed him with a stick over and over in the very place that Stan had stabbed him with the scissors. X was losing consciousness when he heard a voice so furious and commanding that it could only belong to a lord.
Enough! The next man to deliver a blow will receive 100 back from me.
It was Regent, the princely lord. A hush fell over the plain. Exhausted, Banger put his hands on his knees and tried to steady his breathing. Ripper wiped blood from her mouth, looking irked that she could not detach any more fingers. As Regent approached X, the bounty hunters disbanded and sank back into the crowd. The Lord wore his royal blue robe, but no jewels or bangles. He had stolen nothing from his charges. He alone of all the lords seemed to remember that he had once been a prisoner himself. Regent shouted for the guards to drive the mob back up to the cells. Prisoners complained loudly, but knew better than to resist. Only Banger and Ripper remained. They would not abandon their friend, and the guards let them be. Regent tore away the rope that bound X and, when his bruised body fell forward, caught him and eased him to the ground.
"I am sorry for the evil done to you," he said. "Dervish is a villain for engineering this torture, and he will shortly have a conversation with my fists." "You have my thanks," said X. Yet I broke the laws of this place, and was deserving of punishment.
The Lord shook his head.
You were not deserving of this, he said. Never of this.
From behind them there came a wordless holler. It could only be Dervish. Banger saw him and groaned.
This guy sucks.
Ripper turned to Regent.
Say the word, she said, and I will relieve this crazed lord of his fingers.
Do nothing, he told her. I shall settle the matter myself.
Immediately upon his arrival, Dervish began berating Regent.
How dare you set my prisoner free? He said. How dare you even call yourself a lord? Do you really imagine yourself my equal, you filthy creature?
Without a word, Regent struck Dervish across the mouth, sending him flying onto the rocky plain. The prisoners, still rumbling up the staircases, stopped to watch the confrontation. Soon, a dozen other lords streamed in from the tunnels, moving so quickly they seemed to fly.
I told your little friend that your bones would soon swim in his soup, said Dervish. And now I shall drink it down myself.
Ripper laughed at the threat.
Please, she said to Regent. His fingers, may I?
Your proposal has its merits, he said. But no.
The other lords poured in around X now, men and women in a riot of wildly colored garments and gems. Up on the steps, the prisoners were stunned to see so many lords roosting in one place, like brightly feathered birds. Even the guards were mesmerized. The cavern grew silent as the lords took in the strange scene before them. Regent stood in front of X, protectively. When Dervish tried to stand, he nudged him back to the ground with the heel of his boot, causing the prisoners and guards, and even some of the lords, to titter. X was relieved to find that his champion had such standing, yet feared that humiliation would only strengthen Dervish's resolve. He wanted no enemies here, no celebrity. No scrutiny of any kind that might endanger his return to the overworld, and to Zoe. The lords broke into debate about what was to be done. They murmured in low voices, so the prisoners could not hear. Dervish was outraged at the delay. He pointed at Regent and shouted,
"Strike down this rough beast!"
The lords ignored him.
"Why do you tarry, fools?" he screamed. I will have satisfaction.
Regent cleared his throat and addressed the lords, not caring if the prisoners on the steps listened.
This man has been most horribly abused, he said, motioning toward X. Did he violate our laws? He did. Did his actions cry out for punishment? They did. But he did not deserve the horrors that this hateful forgery of a man, now he was pointing at Dervish, devised for him. I would defend any soul against such abuses, and this man is not just any soul.
X had no idea what Regent meant by that last statement, and was shocked to hear other lords murmur their assent. Dervish finally stood. He screwed up his face, as if he had a bitter taste in his mouth.
What could you possibly mean by such nonsense? He said. If X here, you do realize, by the way, that he has given himself a name, which is an outrage all its own. If this troglodyte before me is better than the basest of souls, I should like to hear why.
You know very well why, said Regent. Do not pretend to be even more slow-witted than you are. Your stupidity is already a towering achievement.
Well, if I know why he's so special, and you know why he's so special, Dervish goaded him, then why not simply speak it aloud?
because, as you are certainly aware, the law of the lowlands forbids it, Regent said coolly. Yet you seem quite blustery today. Perhaps you would like to educate everyone yourself.
You think I am too frightened, said Dervish.
He gestured at the lords, who were drawing closer and flashing him looks of warning.
You think I am scared of them? They are weak. They cannot so much as scratch their asses unless it is voted upon and approved on high.
X could not hold his silence.
What can be so shocking about me that no one dares speak of it? He said.
Dervish looked ready to answer. The lords threatened him with their eyes.
This disgrace you call regent believes you are special, Dervish said. Because he believes your mother was special.
At this, the lords swarmed forward and began dragging Dervish away. He struggled and kicked, outraged that they dared to touch him.
"Who was my mother?"
cried X, to anyone who would answer. He looked at Regent.
"Who was my mother?" he said. "Please."
Regent looked at him regretfully but did not speak. Dervish made himself heard a final time.
"She was nothing and no one, just as your father was," he screamed. "Your father was less than dirt. Your mother was a traitor and a whore."
Then his voice was muffled and lost. X needed to know more. His chest was heaving. He found himself near tears. Regent must have pitied him, for he took his arm and began walking him slowly toward the great stone steps.
"Does he speak the truth about my parents?" X asked him.
"That desiccated mouse has no idea who your father was," Regent said quietly.
"I can assure you, however, that your mother was no whore. She is now a prisoner in a secret corner of this place. But, once, she was a true friend to me. Dervish is correct when he says that she is the reason I believe there is hope for you yet." He paused, and all the world seemed to pause with him. "Your mother was a lord."
11. X woke with his head on Ripper's lap as she tended to his wounds. He was shocked to find her in his cell, with no guards in attendance. He'd never known two prisoners to be left together for even an instant. Regent must have made it possible. Ripper sat with her legs folded under her, the ruined golden gown spilling everywhere. Beside her, there was a stone bowl filled with healing water. She dabbed at X's face with a cloth, humming a dreamy tune as she worked. A crude metal lantern threw her silhouette against the wall. Something about the shadow and the song awakened a memory in X.
"You have ministered to me before," he said. "When I was a child, you sang that very song."
Ripper submerged the cloth, then twisted it over the bowl. X winced at the sight of her hands. They were all bone and knuckle. What fingernails she had were ingrown and crusted with blood. Still, there was a gentleness to her, a glow, that he hadn't witnessed since he was small.
"It is one of the few tunes I remember," she said.
"And do not inquire after the words, for they have gone poof out of my brain. Something insufferable about a sparrow, no doubt."
She pressed the cloth to X's brow.
"They never told you my mother was a lord?" he asked her.
"Truly?"
"Never, I swear it," said Ripper.
"I knew there was something special about you, and I told you as much. You were a finer and fiercer bounty hunter than I by the time you were 17. And as you know, I am a veritable legend."
Once she'd cleaned X's wounds, Ripper began to bandage the more severe ones, beginning with the gash on his leg. X did not have the strength to lift his head and survey the damage. Still, he knew it must be profound, because his friend frowned at the sight of it.
"This nastiness on your leg concerns me," she said. "It is a jagged valley of tissue and blood.
Does it burn?"
"Yes," said X, "as if with white flames. And please do not describe it again."
"My apologies," said Ripper.
"I fear it may be infected, though I am not a doctor, merely a murderess."
X ground his teeth to distract himself from the discomfort, and looked up at Ripper. Her skin had hardly suffered from centuries in the lowlands, and she was still beautiful by any measure. She had strong, clean features, a sturdy, dimpled chin, and ageless blue eyes. Because it had been decades since she had hunted a soul, even the bruises beneath her eyes had faded. Today, her dark hair was swept up in a knot atop her head, a single silver lock weaving through it like tinsel.
"Do you miss being a mother?"
X asked her, after a time. Conversation was a welcome relief, and he saw that he would have to feed it, as one feeds a fire. Ripper nodded.
"I was a good one," she said.
"Alfie and Belinda were always rosy and plump.
Unfortunately, one's children grow distant after they've seen one bash a servant's skull with a tea kettle."
X asked if she'd ever looked in on them, peeked in their windows, or stood across the road in disguise, when she had been out collecting souls. Ripper shook her head wearily.
"I could not see my children without embracing them," she said. "I could not have survived it."
For a moment, she was lost in thought.
100 years after I was brought here, another bounty hunter discovered for me what had become of my family. My husband took a new bride,
an American, of all things,
and they sailed for New England, like those ghastly pilgrims. When Alfie was 11.
Ripper stopped for a moment, deciding whether to continue.
"When Alfie was 11, she said, "he perished in a fire, in a stable. He was trapped under a post or a beam or the like. Belinda tried to push it off his chest, but she was only 9 and had not the strength for it. She never recovered from the grief, I was told. She was deposited in some asylum, because my husband's new wife could not countenance her wailing."
"Your husband," said X. "Did you love him?"
The question seemed to break Ripper's cloudy mood.
"Good God, no," she said.
"When he refrained from talking and from putting his sweaty hands on me, he was an amiable enough companion. Yet I suppose a tall plant could have served the same purpose."
X closed his eyes. He listened as she tore a length of bandage.
"I believe,"
he began, but stopped when he felt his cheeks flush with embarrassment.
"Yes?"
said Ripper.
"What is it that you believe?"
I believe that I may be in love," he said.
If Ripper had laughed or smirked, or even paused to let his words ring, he would have clamped his mouth shut. She did neither.
"Yes, I thought it must be something like that," she said.
"Else you wouldn't have broken so many of the laws I taught you. I half expected the lords to punish me for your transgressions, you know. If they did not think me irretrievably mad, they might well have."
"Even I have thought you mad," said X.
"Yes, well, I nearly was for a time," Ripper said. "After I learned of that fire in the stable, I mean. And in that interval I learned that the appearance of madness has its uses."
She stood, and, with a dramatic flourish, tossed